Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with AIB, working alongside Irish communities towards a low carbon future. AIB, for the life you're after.
In the Green Scene today, octopuses joining up with fish to hunt in packs, but first, how robotic bees might help to pollinate the planet. We're joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland. Hey, Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Robotic bees.
I know.
Such a thing.
Such a thing. And we've talked a few times on this slot about, you know, the plight facing bees and other pollinators. And of course, we know that there is a lot of challenges for them, you know, around things like habitat loss, pesticide use, and just the distance they have to travel now to sustain themselves. And that impacts on us, but of course, about a third of the food that we eat is reliant on some sort of animal pollinator. Yeah.
And when you think of what the bee does going from flower to flower, I mean, it's a very efficient process.
It's very efficient. And of course, it happens with very little investment from us, even though we do obviously keep bees as a domestic species. So one of the ideas that scientists have come up with is, could we use robotic, tiny micro robots to do something very similar? And actually, researchers and engineers from various different parts of the world have come up with a few different kinds of robotic bees. And you can imagine some of them are almost like a tiny drone. So, you know, smaller than the size of your hand, but they have those four propellers, a bit like an ordinary drone. But they have a special sort of underside, which can have horsehair bristle or some sort of Velcro-like material.
Yeah.
And they have cameras on them, so they hover, they go down, hover over a flower, they brush off the flower, pick up the pollen as a bee would in certain types of flower. I mean, we know there's some flowers that are very elaborate in terms of pollinator needing to get right down into the flower. But if they can brush off the flower, then they can go from flower to flower and transfer pollen. There's also amazing ones that were developed in Harvard, in the Weiss Institute there, which are half the size of a paperclip. So you can imagine this little thing on the tip of your finger, and it almost has artificial muscles, and there's new materials now that enable this thing to fly, and it has a little sort of electrostatic patch which enables it to perch almost anywhere. It can perch a bit like an insect can, upside down or to the side. So really amazing technology. And then there's some which are more for use in greenhouses. So the idea is they would kind of roll around on the ground. I think these are more sort of like a robot hoover or a robot lawnmower, but they send little puffs of air up under the flowers. And of course, that's just enough to dislodge the pollen grains, send them floating up into the air and maybe
landing
on a plant nearby. Exactly.
It's extraordinary that the tiny little drones have to be powered by a battery of some kind. Also, the bee knows which flowers are good, you know, what they want to do their business. But the drone has to be instructed.
Well, the drone can be programmed. So this is where some of the amazing kind of AI type technology comes in now, and analytics that can be built into the tiniest of robots, because the cameras can pick up the type of flower that the drone needs to land on. And I mean, not only that, researchers are developing artificial hives and even little drones that might go into real hives and might work with the queen. So there's an EU project called Robo Royale, and that's hoping to use robotic bees to go in and essentially work around the queen bee, so helping to guide her towards the most nutritionally rich food that's coming into the hive, to sort of shuffle her towards areas of the hive that are ready to have eggs laid, to try and increase productivity. And these little drones all have tiny cameras, so that scientists can monitor what's going on inside the hive.
Now, you know these wiggle dances that the bees do?
They've even come up with little robot bees that seem to be able to mimic this waggle dance, which shows other bees where to get food. So again, if you think about these drones flying, you know, you're able to then see where the food sources are. You might be able to tell the bee colony where you want them to go. So it's pretty incredible breakthrough technology.
Mm. Now, what about the natural bee population? What's the problem? I mean, is it insecticides? Is it lack of habitat? Because I'm told that most of our bees actually don't live in hives. They live
in the grasses. We've actually got 100 bee species in Ireland, but of course one of those is the honeybee, and many of the others are solitary bees or bumblebees. Those are the kind of bees. But there's things like the varroa mite that gets into hives and that can damage hives. I mean, we know that bee lifespan has dropped quite dramatically in the last number of years. We're not really sure why. We see increased genetic diseases with bees. But look, we have to also think about, I mean, protecting what we have is the most sensible route forward, because
protect our bees rather than
there's huge resources going into creating things like micro robots. Now, they could have advantages to work alongside real bees, because they could help us to monitor the status of crops. They could help us monitor the environment. But certainly the overall impact of creating robotic pollinators is probably much, much more than, you know, just protecting what we have.
Yeah, and the whole business of lithium batteries and, you know, to put in the little robotic bee.
All of these things take resources, you know, and I suppose we have to keep thinking about...
And do we know what the bees think about these invaders coming in? I mean, would they be likely to attack the little drone and say, out of here?
They can do. I mean, if they don't, but we have got to a point now where we can convince them to accept them. But of course, bees are incredibly smart and they will leave a hive if they feel it's been taken over by an invader. So that's another challenge that has to be worked out.
Anyway, we have the Native Irish Honeybee Society helping to try and conserve what we have.
Great work working with the University of Galway. And you can sign up for, if you have any kind of land area, you can sign up to be a conservation area for the Native Irish Honeybee with the Native Irish Honeybee Society.
You always come up with these bizarre stories. And this one is truly bizarre. An octopus hunting along with fish.
Yeah, well, this is new research that came out in Nature, Ecology and Evolution. And of course, there are examples of cooperation in nature. I mean, we all maybe have heard of birds like egrets that land on the back of a water buffalo and they pick the parasites out of the water buffalo, or zebras and ostriches. So, for example, ostriches have very poor eyesight, but a good sense of smell. Zebras have very good eyesight and a poor sense of smell. So they tend to hang out together because between them they can detect predators coming. Yeah. But we don't see that many examples of this happening underwater. There's one or two. A moray eel will hunt with a grouper. The grouper, which is a big fish you find on coral reefs, will find the food and the eel kind of scares it out of its hiding place so the two of them can have a go at hunting it. But we think of octopuses as pretty solitary, and most of the time they are. But this research shows octopuses leading the charge for a hunt for food with fish scouting around for them, and they're very much working cooperatively. And this was what researchers did. They're scientists from the Max Planck Institute of Animal Behaviour in Germany. They tracked the two of them, and they had 13 different hunting groups that they tracked, and they had over 120 hours of very detailed video footage. So they were able to try and assess who was making decisions as the octopus and the fish worked together. And what they found was the fish kind of decide where to go and explore the environment, but the octopus decides if they're going to go there and when they're going to go. And they also found that the hunting efficiency was improved for all species when they work together. And particularly there's one fish called the blue goatfish. It was one of the octopus's biggest helpers, and it was kind of a specialist in deciding where to go. It's almost like a scout in the hunting group. And interestingly, the octopus is very good at picking out kind of people who are coming along for the ride, but maybe not helping out. So the grouper who works with the moray eel, sometimes these black-tipped groupers were just sort of dragging along on the outside of the hunt, and the octopus will literally punch them out of the way. It'll send one of its long tentacles out and just shove them out of the way as if to say, you're not really part of this activity, and off you go.
What an extraordinary story. Mm. Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Research Ireland, thank you very much for joining us.